All right, let's learn. Let's learn what we're up to. We are up to the end of Pasuk, the end of Periperi Beis. We've gone through the Malbim. Now let's take a look at the Likutei Shas. Do the Likutei Shas, and then the Rabbi Avraham Ben Agra. Likutei Shas, we have one Likutei Shas on Pasuk. Just one Pasuk, Yud Gimel, on page 563. Aryeh Toref Bidei Goy Roisav Umichanek Le Liv Oisav Vayimale Teref Choyrav Umir Oisav Terefa. Aryeh, it is Toref, it tears apart. Bidei, on behalf of Goy Roisav, his children. Umichanek, it strangles, prey. Le Liv Oisav, on behalf of its wives. The female lion, vayimale teref chayrav, and the lion, it stores, it hoards food for the future. It fills up food with chayrav, his holes, umi oynoisav, and the caves, treifa, in other words, it fills up with food. Omar Shmuel, ari hatoykef behema b'rishus harabim, a lion that is toykef behema in the rishus harabim, doras v'ochal, potter. And what do we mean, Doras V'Ochal? Over here in the brackets it explains, Shelo Yaharoga Ela Achola Mechayim is potter. Why? That's unusual. It's not the derech of a lion. A lion, the normal custom of a lion is first to kill, is to attack, and the victim should be put to death, and then after it's dead, it will eat up the body. But to eat it when it's alive, Eiver Menachai, okay, Eiver Menachai is something which is not the derech of a lion, potter, and therefore there's a general rule in the laws of Niske Mamoin, Bavakama. You only chayiv for something which is usual, is to be expected. Person has a lion and the lion does what it normally does. It finds prey and it attacks and kills and then eats up. So then the question is, why did you not guard the lion? If you own such a wild, dangerous creature, what was it doing outside of its cage? But if the lion attacks and does something unusual, then the laws of Niske Mamon do not apply and you are exempt. So that's what he's teaching us. So let's say Taraf. And the word Tarav has a connotation which means that it actually took the victim and put the victim to death, and then V'yochal Chayiv. Daras V'yochal Potter, what's the reason? If it's Daras V'ochal, it's Potter. Let's say, Kevon D'Orchel L'Midrash, Havaleh K'moshe Ochlo Peros V'yirokos. The Havaleh Shein, I'm sorry, I didn't explain the more correctly, let's read the words and we'll explain them correctly. The Havaleh Shein B'rishos Rabim U'Potter. I'm forgetting my Bavakama. There's a general rule that if an animal eats in the Rishus HaRabim, you exist. There's shame v'hever, right? There are the four different niske mamayim. If an animal is walking down the street and it sees some food lying on the side of the road and the animal eats the food, potter. Why is it potter? It is the victim, it's his responsibility to protect his food from being destroyed in the Rishus HaRabim. Okay, the laws of torts, the laws of Niske Mamon are very complex. Ruba de Ruba, Chazal put the responsibility upon the Mazik, upon the person who owns, upon the person that causes damage, or upon the person who put the responsibility for him to guard his property, not to cause others harm. But there are exceptions, and that is, if you have food, don't leave the food exposed in the street. Because what do you expect? People have a right to walk in the street with their animals. Animal rights. No, you don't have animal rights? People have a right, the animals have a right to walk in the street. If the animal sees food on the side of the road, what do you think the animal is going to do? It's going to eat the food. So if you are foolish enough to take food, good food, and leave it exposed in an area on the side of the street, and then when some creature eats up that food to make a machlokes and say, look, you're a mazik, you did not guard your animal and ate up my food, too bad for you. There are limits to what we demand of people to do. we're not going to make a person who walks down the street with his animal crazy and tell him that you're going to be guilty if your animal sees food on the side of the road and eats it up. Yeah.
Walking down with the animal, here is that, let's say it's a cat, so you don't have it on a leash. But a dog, you would have on a leash. And maybe there the responsibility changes.
Okay, correct. That is correct. Everything has, this is a general rule. It's a general rule. Obviously, all of the details have to be worked out, obviously. But in a general case, we're dealing with, I guess, an ox or a donkey. I don't know the details. We have to go see exactly what the rule. Every case is obviously different. But there is a principle that a person who has something of value is required by halacha to protect himself. Don't think that your rights, and we have this a lot today in society, what people have these unrealistic expectations. Chazal were very aware of these unrealistic expectations, and they say to you, if you have something of value, don't leave it exposed. What do you think? You think we're going to protect you?
Yell at the ladies in the office. Don't leave your pocketbook on the table.
Exactly.
Put it in a drawer.
Okay, there are certain rules, right? It's turning. So here is the only time when we say that principle is only if the food was destroyed in a usual way. Then we can say that you're going to be exempt. But if the food was destroyed in an unusual way, then indeed we can say that we put the guilt upon the person who is the mazik. So here, let's review the rule one time over here, the second line. He explained in the middle, towards the middle of the second line. Doras v'achal patur. We use halacha. If a lion is walking down the street, it beats me why a lion is allowed to walk down the street. I do not know. Obviously, there's more to this, but at least to get the basic principle. Doras v'achal patur. If the lion came on the orche, limidras, havale kamo sh'ochlo peiros v'irokos, the havale, it's like a regular animal, an ox eats fruits and vegetables, or whatever animal eats these things, the havale shein, v'rishu sarabim, upater, this is a general rule of Masechet Bava Kamma, you're going to be exempt. But taraf, but let's say the animal, the lion first waits for the victim to die, a lion attacks your animal, and waits until it dies, and then it eats up the prey. Lav orcheu, this is not the custom of a lion. This is not the way a lion ordinarily operates. Lememra, so therefore you are going to be chayiv, because there's something here was the only time the Torah gave an exemption to being responsible for what your animal did is only when the animal behaved in a normal way. When the animal did not behave in a normal way, in an abnormal way, then the dispensation does not apply. So here, what do we take out of over here? Lememra, the important principle to extract from this Maimer Chazal is Detrefa Lav Orchehu. It's not the normal custom of a lion to attack a victim and to wait for it to die and then eat. A lion eats Eiver Min Hachai. That's the main Yisoid. And that's a very interesting idea because it opens up a whole new Yisoid of this mitzvah of Eiver, this prohibition of Eiver Min Hachai. Eiver Min Hachai has always come to get us. How did the Sinas Chinam come about? Yosef and Yaakov. Yosef and his brothers. Because Yosef accused his brothers of eating Eiver Min Hachai. It was not true, but that was the accusation. What was the problem? Well, it was partially was true because they did not wait for the animals to stop shaking. What? That's one shot. It was a ben pekuah. The animal they did shchit on the mother, and they took out of the mother, and then there was a baby inside. So the halacha is that nikar you does not require a shchit. And amid rabbanon, you are still required to do a shchit on the fetus inside. But midat Torah, you're allowed to take a bite out of that living creature. Okay, midat Rabbanan it's also. Or other mefarshim say, other chazal say, is that they did not wait for the animal to stop shaking, because when you do a shchita, I'm sure you all saw the pizza videos at some point. After you do a shchita, the animal violently shakes for a period of time until it completely stops shaking. So during that period of time when it's shaking, technically, it's not alive. It's permitted to eat the meat. But, midrabanan, marasayin, if the animal is still shaking, it looks like it's alive. And if someone comes over to the meat and takes a bite out of the animal, it looks like Eiver min hachai. So Yosef's brothers, they did, according to one opinion, they did a ma'isa shechita, and the animal was still shaking. And while it was shaking, they had a meal. They started eating the animal. And Fechazal, they tell us that there was a reason why they did this, because it's very healthy. Is to eat, if a person eats from the meat of the neck of the animal, the moment, maybe there's some scientific studies to explain what significance there is to this, to eat when it's warm, the meat, when it's still warm, the second after the animal dies, it seems, at least in ancient times, there was a health benefit.
You didn't have to kosher it?
No, so if it's raw, you don't. You actually don't have to kasher it. You only have to kasher it if you're cooking it. And it's being put. So okay, today, there are a lot of chumras that we do today. We do a lot, but let's talk about the ikar hadin, the bare bones skeleton halacha. Min hatoira, is it mutter? I don't know if these things are true. I don't know the scientific background, medical background to these things, but this is something that Chazal talk about, is that there's a certain hell, there was a belief, maybe there.
Right here.
Right, exactly. The moment after the shechita, teeth from the neck. Teeth from the neck of the animal, the moment, is there anything, something like this? I don't know if this is an ancient type of beliefs, if it's true, not true.
That's why Dracula goes to the neck.
No, there must be something to it.
Easiest place to reach. What's he going to take the guy's coat off and bite him on his head?
But anyway, it's before Matan Torah anyway, so I mean, they can do whatever they want.
No, not necessarily. I don't know, but this was one of the accusations that they made against Yosef, that he ate Eiver Min HaChai. So what do we learn over there? Who is indeed the one that eats Eiver Min HaChai? It is a lion. A lion's derech is to eat Eiver Min HaChai. That's a very interesting point. Yehuda is a Malchus of Klal Yisrael. Yehuda and Yosef and Yehuda, you know, there was a lot of friction between Yosef and, we spoke about last week, about Yosef was the feminine, right? The feminine element to Yosef HaTzadik. He was a Baal Bechi. It's very, very interesting. And this was where all of the Sinas Chinam began, is where Yosef, Vayove Yosef, es dibosom ro'ah el avihem, he accused his brothers of eating Eiver min hachai. There was another thing he accused them of being mezalzel in the Bnei Shfachos, in the children of Bilah and Zilpah. Did not treat them equally. Okay? So, fine, let's go further. So here we have over here, so what do we look over here? Here we have this sugya of the lion. And the Gemara, what does it take away? The takeaway from this, Maimer Chazal is Lememra, the Treifa Lav Orchehu. It's not the derech for a lion to wait for its victim to die. Frak the Gemara of Yaksim, it says in the pasuk Aryeh Toireth Bidei Goy Roisov. We have now a open direct contradiction from this very pasuk, because this pasuk says that it is the Aryeh indeed that is Toireth Bidei Goy Roisov. The word Toireth means it waits. The word toireif has the connotation that it waits until the victim is dead before it eats. So how can you go make this whole elaborate drasha and come out with a maskana in halacha to be chayiv a potur when it's meferish a pasik of aryeh tabidei b'goresav b'shvil havi l'goresav dark? So the more, you know, here's the more answer: b'shvil lahavi l'goresav darkoi l'toireif. That's the answer. And likewise, umichanek liv oisav, bishvil liv oisav, vayimali teref chayrov, bishvil chayrov, umoinus of trefa, bishvil meoinusav. So he's saying a fascinating answer. And there's a lot of musr in this answer. Is that when the only time we have a principle that a lion does not wait for its prey to die is only when it's eating its own meal. It's eating dinner. It's eating lunch, breakfast, or having a snack in between television commercials. Latest updates. But when the lion is attacking for someone else, for the children, for its wife, for its storage, for the closet, for the holes, then the lion has patience. The lion is in no rush, and it says, okay, you could die first. I'll wait until it dies, and after it dies, then it will take away and bring it and put it for storage or bring it to its wife and children. So what do you take out of that? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? When it comes to itself, it has no patience. When it comes to someone else, it has patience. It waits for the creature to die. I don't know what to make of this. I don't know. You want to say this is a milah or a chesaron? Waiting, obviously, waiting for the eating the animal alive appears to be barbaric. And the proof is the Torah says eiver menachai is awesome. Now let's do that for us. A lion was not makabel the Torah, so lion can do whatever it wants. Yet when it comes to someone else, the lion's behavior in preparation, in dealing with food for others, it behaves in a more civil fashion.
But doesn't the animal have instinct?
Yes.
That's the way he is created.
Okay, so it's right. There are animals that have good midos, and there are animals that have bad midos. Chazal said that if not for the fact that Torah was given, we would have learned what it means, tsnius, from a cat. We would have learned work ethic,
diligence
from an ant, all of these things. And
there
are good things, there are bad things. The chassida. So what is the chassida? The chassida is a bird which is able to go see, can see miles away what's going on. It's able to go see and why is it called the chassida? It does chesed im chavroi seho, kindness with its friends. So then the famous question, if that is the case, why is it a non-kosher bird? If this creature does chesed, does kindness, it brings food to the poor and the destitute, so why is it not kosher? So Chazal answer, im chavroi seho. It only does kindness with its friends. It does not do kindness with outsiders. So obviously, in every single creature, there are good milas, there are bad milas. I don't know. Over here, we learned a new yisoid about a lion. A lion is a very important creature, because on the top of it used to be in the olden days, they still have it here, right? We have it here. I can't see from here. Are there two lions there?
Lion?
I can't see. It's too far from the ceiling. Yeah. Are there lions on top of the Aron Kodesh?
Yes.
There are.
Yes. Where?
No? Next to the luchos. On the right,
holding the side of the
local. I can't see from here. The blocking, the chandelier is blocking. What? There's nothing there on the Aron HaKodesh?
Yeah.
It used to be in the olden days. I don't know what happened, but in the olden days, they used to have lions on top of every single Aron HaKodesh.
Then they put
the
blind lions.
Blind lions? What happened to the eyesight?
Blind.
Okay, and I think they still have in every Gemara, right? Every Gemara, they took them away off top of the first page of the Gemara. They used to have lions.
Animal
it used
rights.
To. What? Animal rights. They took them off. Okay, so a lion is a very important creature. Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Okay, and there are two people that are called, and Don Gur Aryeh. That's one of my favorite verklach. Why are there two? One of the first things I learned in this shir. Go back 100 years when we first started the shir. So one of the first things we learned is why there are two lions on the Aron HaKodesh. The sixth parasha. Because who is the builders of the Mishkan? Of the Mishkan? There was Bezalel, Mishavet Yehuda, and Aholiyah ben Achisamach Lemate Dan, who are the only two Shevatim that are compared to a lion? Yehuda and Dan. When you walk into Shul, there are two lions. And Yehuda was the most Choshev of the Shevatim. Dan was the lowest. Chazal say, I'm not making up those words, they say the lowest of all the Shevatim. And why? Why was the Mikdash built by the most choshev and by the lowest, by Bezalel? No one should ever say you're not allowed to come into the Beis Medrash. You're not allowed to come into the Mishkan. It's not for you. It's only for the elite. The Mishkan was built by the top and the bottom, by the most elite, and by the shevet that was considered to be the bottom rung. as if to say, this equality, long before America, long before America came along, the Mishkan was a place that was built by the two master craftsmen from the top to the bottom as a statement that the Mishkan is for everyone, top to bottom. You come into Shul, what's on top of the Aron? The Aron represents the center of, that's what the whole Shul is for, the sanctuary. You come over here, that's what gives the Kedusha. And what's there? Two lions. Who are the two lions? Bezalel and Aholiyav. Just give names. There's Bezalel on top of the Aron HaKodesh, and there is Aholiyav on top of the Aron HaKodesh. The Torah is for everyone. Whether you're the greatest person who ever lived, or whether you are the simplest person who doesn't even know the letters of the Aleph Beis. This place is for you. Open up a Gemara. On the first page of every Gemara, there are two lions. It doesn't matter if you know Kol HaTorah Kula, inside out. There's more what to learn. And if you don't know the Aleph Beis, for you there's also what to learn here in this page of this Masechta, the Staff Gemara. That's why there are two lions. Now, we learned over here today a new yisod about a lion. I never knew this yisod over here. The reason in the past, the Gemara says a lion is a very violent creature. You would not want to be walking down in a black and dark alley in the middle of the night and meet up with a lion. It's not a good thing. A lion is a violent creature which eats its prey alive. Eiver min hachai. But yet, when it comes to someone else, it's very delicate. It's tame. It waits patiently until Yitzias Neshama. And then it takes it away for someone else. Is that a Milo or Chasaron?
Does it only hunt when it's hungry?
What?
That means it doesn't hunt. It only hunts when it's hungry.
That's another story. There's another, you have to go ask a zoologist. Zoologists, the nature of lions, are they hungry, not hungry? There's a lot of chokhmah behind all this. I don't know how lions...
Too much energy to give out.
So lions sleep most of the day. Lions are very, very shvacha creatures. They're very, very tired.
In the jungle.
Here too.
They had a couple of weeks ago a very good article about someone in Eretz Yisrael. There's a zoo in Eretz Yisrael. And there's a fellow that's what he does, Parnassa. He takes care of the lions. And he sits, it's like an open zoo where people, you drive in. You drive in your vehicle, there it is, and they have lions, and the lions, they roam around. They have gates at the perimeter, a very large area, and this fellow, they wrote him up. It was a very good article. We wrote him up about, that's what he does the whole day. He basically sits in his, in a booth, and he watches the lions, and he takes care of them. He's busy with them the whole day. And well, he talks about his background, where he comes from, the whole story about lions. And he writes there about the nature of a lion. What is, when are they dangerous? When are they not dangerous? When do they sleep? Not sleep? Different times of the year? Weather conditions? There's obviously a whole science. But here, Chazal, obviously they knew their stuff, and they're teaching us over here a very important yisoid. It's something to put away for later. This yisoid, obviously, I think this yisoid will come in handy at some point in time to understand, appreciate this unique nature of a lion, Avim and Achai for itself, but for someone else it is patient. Ari, you know, Ari is a famous Rosh Hashanah. Ari is Aleph is Elul, Resh is Rosh Hashanah, Yud is Yom Kippur, and He is Hoshana Rabba. It's a very famous, popular acronym for the Yemei HaRotzayim. The days of Rotzayim are Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Hoshana Rabba, Aryeh Sha'og, Milo Yira. When the lion roars, are you not afraid? It's a time to do teshuvah, to get your act together for the future. Okay, so this includes the Likud Shas. Now, let's take a look at Rabbi Avraham ben Agra, back on page 560, up to Pasuk Yud Beis. Ayei me'oin aroyois umirehu lakefirim. Asherholach Arye lovi sham gur Arye ve'ein macharit. It's a very hard pasuk. The simple translation was either it's a kina, we're coming to lament over the korban of Ninveh, or we learned this is a description of the palace. We had a very novel interpretation from the Malbim yesterday that understood this to be a reference to the king, the palace. In the palace, the king is paranoid. He thinks he's going to be killed. So he commands that his children and his wives be put to death. That's how the Malbim learned. Rabbi Aaron Agro, he writes, Amar derech kina al ninveh. So he begins with the same words as the Radak. We're now writing about a kina al ninveh. Ayei ma'oin arayosh. Shomu hayu modor arayosh. In Ninveh was a modor, was a dwelling place of the lions. Hu mashal al malchehem. This is a mashal, a metaphor for their kings. Umirehu lakifirim. It was a place of pasture for the baby lions. Hey b'nei malachim. B'nei hata'ar. B'nei hata'a roivois, shama b'nois deshen. What does it mean? B'nei hata'a roivois. I'm not sure what he means by that. Yeah. What does it mean? Hata'a roivois. It means mixture. Taruvois. I don't know. I'm not sure what it means by that. Shama b'nois deshen. How you roim? We call tanugi ha'olam. There in this palace, in this area, they would pasture. And there was nothing lacking. Any delicacy they wanted was present. They were confident that they were protected from the enemy. Even if the king would go on business, and the queen would remain, it was protected. Vitzar bal yavu b'soichon, no enemy will come inside. Veze omroy, asher holach arye lovi sham, gur arye ve'ein macharid. And that's what it means over here, is that the arye would leave. Asher holach arye, he's saying some very, I like what he says, because he's saying he's reading the pshat in a very nice way. Asher holach arye, the lion would go out to the world on business. Lovi sham, and would leave his wife there. Okay, no, none of the other commentators actually said that. He makes it very clear. The Arye, the male lion, would go out to the world on business to conquer, to achieve, and Lavisham would leave his wife, the queen. The king would go out into the world and would leave the queen in the palace. Gur Arye ve'ein macharit. And the Gur Arye, which means that the baby lions, would also remain there. And the Ein Macharid, there was nothing to worry about. They were safe and secure. The Oid Shilishia Ba, Garim Holcha Melech Vagviro Nishar, Vinishar, anything new. And then he's saying, Gur Ari, the Ein Macharid is a new statement. That it was so safe that even if the queen would accompany the king, it would also be okay. Garim Holcha Melech Vagviro Vinishar, Gur Ari, Echod Hu Ben Melech, meaning Justice child, Gam Kane, the Ein Macharid Oymi Pachad, there was nothing to worry about. Okay, so he's saying something very similar to what we learned over here in Rashi in the Mitzudos. So far, it's pretty straightforward. Let's see the next pasuk. Pasuk give on the next page, on page 562 in the Beir Rabbi Avraham, Aryeh Toyreif Bidei Goy Oysav Umichanek Le Liv Oysav Vayimali Tedef Chayrav Umi Oynoysav Terefa Hiskir Masay Melech Ninveh Ve'ashukav. Now we describe over here the deeds of the king of Ninveh. Hahevdal B'shabein Toref L'mechanekhu Ki Mechanek Shohor Goy V'nishar Haguf Sholem. When it comes to strangulation, the body remains intact. V'toyrefhu L'chatichos Ketanes. The word Terefa has a connotation that the body is mutilated. And here it says, you have to give the children small portions, right? You have to go and slice, cut the food for a little child. You don't give a little child a big piece of food. You're afraid the child's going to choke. You give the child little teeny pieces. Likewise, for the children, tarif, you take the food and you rip it into teeny little pieces. But he does not need to give his wife a little teeny pieces. Let the wife cut the food herself. V'heim atzmam tarfim, they themselves will be tarfim. Hasher ba'asef oisam ha'baisa, u'machlitzim lo'itzar, and then when you take the food into your home for storage, ha'tereifois heim chatichos ketanis matznir b'chodim v'ze armu v'ayim alay teref chayrof. V'hatereifa ha'shaleima asher mevi liv oisav m'malei me'oin oisav she'edim nichnasim b'chodim b'stokim. That is not, that you don't have to put into teeny little pieces, then you can take the entire one big piece. So it's something very cute, very interesting. And that is, the choyrov are the little compartments, and the me'oinoisav are the big compartments. So the big compartments, you put a big chunk of meat. You don't need to cut it down into teeny little pieces. But in the little teeny holes, in the small compartments, there you have to put little pieces. So when it says in the pasuk, when it says choyrov, choyrov goes back on the vayimale teref, which means the small pieces, and umeoinoisav tereifa, that's really referring to the umechanek leliv oisav. The treifa means the entire chunk, the big large piece, you can put away in one big compartment. The cave is a big compartment. So it's very interesting how he takes this pasuk over here and he explains over here. When it comes to the little children, it's tereif. He breaks down to the little teeny pieces. When it comes to the adults, there's no need to break it down into little pieces. We use the word umechanek. And then the end of the pasuk parallels the beginning of the pasuk. When it comes to storage, in the choyrav, into little cavities, there he puts away little pieces, going back on the toireif. And when it comes to the me'oinoisav, which is the large compartments in the closet, in the large storage facilities, there he puts treifa, the large piece that has come through umechanek. Okay, let's do the next pasuk. Pasuk.
He's not talking about kids.
No, obviously not. Right. He's learning like Rashi, Radak, like everyone else. Rashi, Radak, and the Mitzudos. The only one that said that wild shot that we're talking about over here, the palace. He's talking about the palace. That's one thing that is true. He's talking, well, okay, right, he's talking about the palace. That's right. He's talking about the king. But he's not describing over here his act of commanding that his wife and children should be put to death because he's afraid of the enemy is coming. Let's see the next passage. Because of your sins, the sins of Ninde are extremely evil. Hinni Eilayich, I am against you. Vivarti ve'oshen richba, I will burn with fire, an intense fire that produces smoke, your chariots, your weapons. Ma'ashan eish pilodois harechev shelo oye. Remember, we went back to this, the word pilodois. We had many translations for the word pilodois. And the simplest translation was we took the pan, the lamed, and we interchanged them. Lapid. Okay, that's not the simple translation, lapid, which means a torch. And why was it called a torch? Because with the chariots, when they traveled so quickly, they produced sparks. So to the observer who would see these chariots with their iron wheels rubbing against the rock, against the earth, it would produce a spark. It looked like fire was going forth. And then we had other interpretations of what I don't remember. But Yivar Richba Shal Anshe Ninve, their chariots are going to burn. Uchif Yirayich, Heima B'nei Hasadim, Hagiboidim, Toich Al Cherev, Vichrati, I will cut down Me'eretz Tarpech, Sheyitarfim B'chol Oretz, V'lo Yitroif Oid, V'lo Yishama Oid Kol Mal Ochecha, Kol HaSheluchim HaMafilim, Lavoy HaTeref Bo'itza HaMelech, Lo Yishama Oid, no longer will the messengers that terrify you to come and bring cause lavoy atedef beitz hamelch to take away to steal and to rob, to plunder. They will no longer be hurt. Okay, that concludes this perek. Baruch Hashem, we concluded this perek. Now go into perek gimel. Ir damim kula. Okay, a city full of blood. Well, I'm sorry, I skipped the word. Hoi. I'm sorry, I skipped. Hoi, whoa. So this is like a kina. This fits very much along with the last pasuk of Aye. Here he's saying hoi. Hoi is just an expression of frustration, an expression of tsar. Hoi, whoa. Hoy, whoa. Ir damim kula. The entire city is filled with blood. Kachash perek mileya. Now, kachash literally means a lie, and perek means to break mileya. Lo yomish teref. We have to see what that means in one moment. The combination of these two words together. Sheker, it's filled with lies. Mm. And perek means it's filled with brokenness. Okay, it's an assembly. Now, I put the word kula, I connected it to the word damim. We have to see the mefarshim. There are different ways to put how to connect the word kula. Is kula connected to the word damim, or is the word kula an introduction to the word kachash? Right, so the pashtus says it's connected to the end, because kachash is a maschil. Okay, a mapach. Kachash is a mapach. Mapach pashta zokev katoin, it's a new sentence. So that would indicate the word kula is the conclusion of ir damim. Kula. Kula means entirely. We'll see in one moment. Lo yomish taref, the teref does not end. Okay, the plunder and the killing is not going to come to an end. This plague is going to go on. Pasuk beis. Kol shoit. Shoit means a rod, which basically means abuse. You hear in the street, you open up the window, you hear officers, you hear soldiers beating up people. You hear the sound of their baton whipping people over their head. The sound of the shoit, the kol rash oifan, you hear all of the trucks and the vehicles. You ever see these horrific movies of the Holocaust, right? All these films. It's mamish what you hear. What do you hear? You hear the vehicles, the tanks, you hear commotion. It's not good. It doesn't sound good. You open up the window, you hear soldiers running around, you hear people being beat up by sticks, and you hear vehicles roaming the streets. The kol rash oifan, visus doyher. The word doyher is obviously a reserved word for the sound of a horse. A horse in English, what's the word for a horse in English?
Neigh.
Neighs. It's very interesting that in different languages, there are reserved words to describe the sound of each creature. In English, we have that.
A donkey brays,
a horse neighs, a dog barks, okay, a cat
meows.
Every creature has a unique term that describes its unique sound. So this is not unique to English. Everything comes from Lashon HaKodesh. Lashon HaKodesh, indeed it's true. Every single creature has a term that describes its sound, and that speaks volumes. I mean, obviously there's a lot to be said about that. Okay, koil, the sus doyher. The word doyher here we're simply translating is it makes its unique type of sound. We say it neighs. Umer kava mirakeda, and the chariots are dancing. Now, that doesn't mean in a good way. Obviously, it means that the sound of the chariots roaming the streets are very unpleasant. Let's say paros, parosh, ma'aleh. What does it mean, the parosh? This is the rider, the parosh means the horseman. The horseman, or the horseman. Ma'aleh, he ascends. What is he ascending? He is ascending his horse, it seems. Or is it he is coming higher to the city? We'll see in a few moments. V'lahav cherev, and you look outside, you see the blade of the sword. U'virak chanis, it appears to also, the virak is also the reserved term for the blade of the spear. A sword has a lahav. What?
The whoosh?
Okay.
When you throw it.
Uvirak. Okay, like lightning. It's almost like lightning. Borok is like lightning. The chanis, when you throw a spear, there is a certain sound it makes, or a certain mare, a certain glow, a glitter, or the it's shiny. When it reflects the light of the sun or the moon, whatever it is, or the fires that were burning. The roiv cholol, there's an abundance of dead bodies. The choived poger, the weight of the dead. Now the word peger, this is poger, it's spelled over here, we pronounce it poger, but it's the same as peger. It's a dead body. Peger and a cholol are the same. A cholol simply means it was killed by sur. The Gemara talks about chalal cheref. A chalal cheref means a person who dies by the sword. A peger, in this context, it would appear to be a person who dies from disease. A person, I guess, due to starvation, or because there is disease in the city, a peger, a peger corpse.
A dead person, yeah. Or a dead animal?
Dead body.
I don't know. Both.
A peger.
Dead. That's a Yiddish word. Okay, that's a Yiddish word. Well, it's a Yiddish word. So the question over here is, you say by a goy. A goy is dead. A goy's body is a peger. Okay, so how do we use this word in the context? Is you're asking a question, do we only use this word in reference to animals or human beings? Human beings also use this word in Hebrew.
It's derogatory.
In Yiddish. Okay. The choyve peger, the ein keitze lagevia. There's no end to the dead bodies. Now you notice there are three words here we're using for a dead body. We're using the word cholol, the word poger, and the word givia. Three very unpleasant words to describe the situation of Nineveh. The choshlu big via some, and there are so many dead bodies. People, when they walk the streets, they're stumbling over dead bodies. People who went to Shanghai after the war to escape, they'll tell you about this. And I don't know if anyone is even living from that generation. Maybe hopefully there are some people, but they would literally the Baruch Hashem. We're in America, we're spoiled, Baruch Hashem. But in Japan, life didn't have much value, and people literally just walked outside. It was the heat was impossible. 120 degrees was normal, and they did not have what to eat. And people did not have hygiene was not very good. And people, every day, people just dropped dead in the streets. And the sanitation would make their rounds, basically, to pick up dead bodies. The same way we put out the garbage on twice a week, and the sanitation comes to take away your garbage. People, they will put on the corner of the street dead bodies. And the sanitation, if you're lucky, the government was willing to do it, they would come by once in a while and pick up the dead bodies. Could you imagine? That's and people they saw this. All the people, the Europeans, those who went to Mir Yeshiva, they lived in the middle of this. For what is it, like 2 years? Some of them were there for 2 years even. And so here it says there were so many dead bodies. You walk in the street, be careful when you cross the street, you should not stumble over a dead body. In some place of Manhattan, that's almost happened to me, you can literally stumble over homeless people. Yep. You walk down the streets, 2nd Avenue, there are people, mamish, every block there's another homeless person. Okay, it's every block. They build the subway is geferlich now. De Blasio, it's unbelievable what he's allowing on the subways. He destroyed. Bloomberg, I know Bloomberg, there's 1 mile, Bloomberg had a mile. He could not tolerate a homeless person. He couldn't bear to see it. So he gave away half the city's budget to getting the homeless off the streets. And he believed that by doing so, it will enhance the economy of New York City, because the people can go on the subway and people can walk the streets and there. It's pleasant to walk the streets. People want to live in New York City. Mm-hmm. And then, but it cost quite a lot of money. A lot of foreign people became very rich from that. Yeah. They became very, very rich from Bloomberg's decision to allocate half the budget of New York City to take away the homeless off the streets.
SROs.
And then after Bloomberg, that's not the mayor. He doesn't want to give away all the city's money, so he lets the homeless remain on the street, and it is very, very unpleasant for many people who travel. And I'm going down 2nd Avenue. 2nd Avenue, they extended the subway system. You take the Q train, it's unbelievable. You take the Q train, it's not real. And those subway stations, I cannot get over it. Every time I go, I cannot get over how they built that. There's new, yeah, I cannot wrap my mind around it. Okay, so it must cost billions, trillions of dollars what they did. And yet what's so ironic is, billions of dollars, you walk out of this incredible subway and you come up there and the whole street is lined with homeless people. And you cannot literally, I almost tripped over a homeless person as I'm crossing the street. There's a homeless lying right there, flat, blocking the, you know, the walkway to cross the street.
Well, Houston and Bowery was like that. I mean,
okay, so you mamish gotta be careful not to trip. Rachmana l'Islan. Here it says, V'choshlo digviyasam. Okay, now let's take a look at it. We have over here a few psukim. Let's take a look at these psukim. There's more psukim. There are more psukim. But let's now take a look over here. At least let's start on some of these psukim in the Mefarshim Pashup Shat. The Mitzvah stuff on page 5. On page 5, it starts on the next page. On page 565. Hoy, ir damim. Okay, we're going back to describe the situation in Nineveh. Hoy, whoa. Oy lecha ata Nineveh. Whoa to Nineveh. Ir shoyfech es damim. Now, this is very important. Why is Nineveh slated for such incredible churban? Why are they? So this pasuk over here, according to Rashi, is coming to give us some insight into their sins as to why they were deserving to be obliterated. Now we have something personally against them, and that is they exiled the Aseres Hashvatim. And we learned many times that Hashem has in his heart a special hatred for them, what they have done to the Am HaNivchar. Correct? Now, but we also, as religious Jews, are conflicted because that we know that whatever happens to us is due to our sins to some degree. So how do you balance that we deserve what we got? With the fact that they are what they did to us, if they were just the shluchim of Hashem, so we have all the answers of the Rambam, we have all that. But there's another element, and that's a very important element, and that is the land of Nineveh were evil in their own right, meaning that even if we were tzaddikim, and nothing happened to us, we would not have been exiled. The Aseres Hashvatim would have remained in security and peace in Eretz Yisrael. Nineveh anyway would have been destroyed because Nineveh were wicked in their own right. They were people that were corrupt. It was a dysfunctional society. What was the problem with the society? So here, according to the Mitzvahs, we're getting some insight into what the problems were. Number one, he says, "Olcha ata Nineveh ir shofeches damim." You are a city of murderers. There's no law and order. Kula adas sheker. He takes the word kula. He attaches it to the next sentence. The entire city is full of liars. There's not one honest man to be found in the country. Umaleya shever l'shaber es habrios. Everyone is always trying to take advantage, always trying to steal from you, to break you, to commit a crime. L'shaber es habrios v'lo yisosur mipio es hateref. It does not cease their quest to steal. He tasmid laharoig ula abed esu umois. They're in the business of murder, extortion, lying, and stealing.
How's that different from Sodom and Gomorrah, though?
Good question. I don't know. We have to, something to study. To study evil.
Sodom and Gomorrah had to be destroyed, and then he was trying to save.
Sodom, you're right. Sodom and Gomorrah, you're right. It's a very good question to understand the nuances of evil. Evil is a very complicated.
Sodom was a first time. You're a second time.
No, you're saying, look, you talk about this fellow, his name is who wrote the book on God versus Gods. He's in the middle of writing a major work on trying to understand the difference between all the different types of idols. Can you explain to me the difference between the idol called Baal and Dagon?
Klein?
There's Baal, you go, I Klein. Baal, Dagon, what are they? Only, what? Marcolis, right? Okay, that's already three. They're like 20 of them. Okay, all over Tanakh, we learn about all Baalpar. What about Baalpar? Baalpar is a very famous one, right? It's Baalpar, Baal, Digon, Marcolis. Okay, then there's the calendar. Calendar, the holidays of the garden, they would celebrate December 25th. Salamandra. So can you explain to me the difference in hashkafa, in ideology between all the different types of idols? I can't. Okay. To me, it's all the same. Obviously, if Chazal speak about them, and it's in Tanakh, there's something to learn. there is something to understand. Now, is it something you should devote your life to? I can't say it is, okay? But there is, obviously, there are different nuances, there are different concepts, and there's what to learn. In evil, obviously, there is different types of evil. The evil of Sidoim va'amoira is not the same as Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar is not the same as Amalek. Amalek is not the same as Ashur. Yavon is a different variety. Each type of evil is unique, and it has a different flavor. I don't know. You're right. It's what the
stone went according to the law. They had laws.
They had laws to be evil. He's saying an idea. You have a system of evil. Here there is no system. It's just chaos. Edom appears to. There's a law. There's a law. You're not allowed to feed the poor. This is all right. Well, he's saying that Asher was a land of Hefkerus. It's the Wild West.
This is a continuation of the previous Keta. Because I was correct and this and this and this. Now it's
Wildkind. You get what you deserve.
Now it's your turn.
Now it's your turn. You get what you deserve. Okay, in a Hanami. You have to study the Psukim to understand the nature of each nation. Let's go further.
This is the Ninve after Yonah, right?
Yes, this is the Ninve of Yonah. Yonah came to give them Musa. They accepted. But then 40 days later, that's the whole discussion. When exactly they were ultimately destroyed. That's the given. The question is how much after were they destroyed? Was Ninve destroyed? But any event it says over here. Okay, let's go to the next. That's a Kol Shoit. Now, I told you the word shoit was going, they were beating up people. It doesn't say that. They were using the shoit, hit the horses to move faster. The sound of the roar of the wheels of the chariot. To terrify the people, this commotion, the sound of the army marching was a terrifying sound. It would skip and jump. The chariot would dance. It would look like it was in a dance due to the intensity of its speed. Wasn't straight, so it looked like it was jumping back and forth. And this would terrify the observers. Pasuk Gimel, Parosh Maleh. HaParosh, the horseman, or horsemen, Hoyamala Atzmai Klape Ma'ala Bid Ligas Hasus, he would jump up. I guess they would do some tricks. They would have, you've seen all the pictures where they have the horse jumps up on two legs.
It's called rearing.
Rearing the horse? Bid Ligas Hasus, the Yoda Lahav Cherev, okay, and in his hand it would be a sword. A shiny sword, uvirak chanis, v'hu oise chalolim rabim ufigorim harbe, and the horsemen would take their sword and their spears and murder many people. Ve'ein keitze lagvia, lohoyesoif el givias haharugim, there was no end to the dead bodies, hamushlochim ba'oritz, that were on the streets, add to the degree shebnei adam, nichshlu b'givias haharugim, they would stumble, they would trip over the dead bodies, ki loimatsu mekoyim ponu lelechas, there was nowhere to walk. Unbelievable what was going on. Okay, let's take a look over here at Rashi. Rashi pasik aleph. Rashi starts off with the word perek. Perek is, we translated this in the Mitzudos David to mean to break. It was a city of corruption where each man was coming to look out to break, to destroy his fellow man. Gozel, perek means theft. Shemeforkoi miyad bolav, you remove it, you unload it, you unload the assets, the wealth from the hand of your friend, of its owner. Lo yomish toref mitoicha tamid. Okay, lo yomish means continuously. We have that pasuk by the Torah. Lo yomish ha Torah hazeh mipicha mipi zaracha mipi zera zaracha. The word yomish is a word which means continuously, and that's what Rashi is picking up on. Pasuk beis kol shoyt lahakoyes susim hoya nishma ba tamid. The sound of the whip to hit the horse to go faster was heard. The call rash oifani merkavois the sus doyher doyle, the word doyher I told you means to neigh. Okay, that's incorrect. at least according to Rashi and the Mitzudos, the word doher means to doileg is to skip. Doileg, umika peitz, and to jump and to skip. V'chein,
to gallop.
Midaharois, taharois, abirov, the galloping of the mighty soldiers. Pasuk gimel, v'lahav, cheref. Okay, that is a French word, Michal. Maybe you can help us. You came just in time.
L-A-M-E, lam, in French for a knife or sword, are called lahav.
Okay, called sakin acheref kari lahav. Every knife is called a lahav. Kemo vayavo gam hanitzav achar halahav. The officer came after the lahav. Uvirak chanis, chanis miruto. It was shiny. U mavrekes or yotze mimena. The eish mahapeches, the lahav hamisapeches, the ganedin, the cherev, the lahav cherev hamisapeches. In front of ganedin, there were kruvim, and the kruvim were holding in their hands these swords, the blade of the sword hamisapeches that would spin, the revolving sword to make sure that no one enter into ganedin. Okay, next, Chanis Meruto, that was Shani Umivarekes, or Yotze Nimena. And what's this word, Michal?
Splendor, shine.
It sounds like a splendor. It sounds like a sweetener, an artificial sweetener.
Splendor.
Okay. The Choyved Poger, the weight of the dead bodies. Hayu Marbim Pegarim, the intensity of the dead bodies, the Ain Ketzer.
They accumulated,
they made a lot, there was a lot of death. The Ain Ketzer, Lagvil, Lohoya, Cheshman, Lagvist, there was no calculation of the dead bodies. Nevelos, Hamushloch, is Ba, Ad Shahoyu, Hoivrim, Nichshalim, Bigvios, Habagarments, until the point where the people that were walking in the street, they would trip over the dead bodies lying in the street. Let me just look at our doctors a little bit.
Plus, it did something very interesting here. First, he saw there was sound.
Okay.
The sound is the pasuk, the call.
Then comes mare.
And then he saw the sight.
Sight.
Sight is like
very good.
Lahav is more like lava, is fire.
Very good.
It's the shine. It looks like fire. Barak shel chanit is also
excellent.
Sight. And then he says the tosa'ah, the result. What was the result?
Physical result. Very good. Excellent. So Kalman is saying there are three different senses. Three stages. There is sound, sight, and then something physical. Something physical. You would actually stumble. The result, you couldn't survive. You couldn't actually live in this world. Sight, after sound, eine doime shmiel l'ri'ah. It was both of them together. Achman al-Tzlan, you have all these different psychological warfare. Like we had, but we learned this. Many psychological warfare is very, very powerful. Okay, let's just start a little bit, a few minutes to Radak. We have another 3 minutes. Radak, Pasik, Aleph, Hoy, Ir, Damim, Hoy. Leshoin, Kiria, Oy, Hu, Kimo, Oy. Or, Oy, Hu, Kimo, two different translations. Either word, Hoy, means call out. It's an actual word. According to the Radak's first translation, the word hoy means kriya. I want you to call out. This is a translation. O, hu kimo oy. This is not a real word. There is no meaning to this word. This word is an expression of frustration.
Government is full with
oy. Oy. The chazonim. The chazonim.
Which in English is whoa.
Whoa, exactly.
Because it's a symbol, it's
doesn't mean you're actually, is there a translation for this word? In the Radak's first interpretation, the word hoy indeed has a translation. It means call out. And in the second interpretation, it does not have a translation. It's nothing more than an expression of grief, a sound of grief. Oy hu kimo oy. V'chein tirgim yonason vay. Okay, yonason, he learns, it means, he learns, it means, Vai means whoa, which
oy vei.
We're machmir. Kachash means shemachishim u'mashaknim ish ba'achiv. They're liars. People, there is no integrity in society. V'chein mileya perek hu k'moy gezel. There is theft. Sheparek davar miyad acher v'chein uferakto ula. You will remove the yoke from upon your friend. Poirek ve'imatzil, another example, lo yomish taref. Lo yomish mitoicha tenef ki b'chol yom v'yom tarefim. It's continuous. There's no end. Pasuk Beis kol shoit. V'yata na yishama olecha ve'oivim haboim olecha kol shoit shamakim haparashim hasusim larutz. They hit the horses. They call Rash Oifon Shem Maharim Lolechas Lavoy Ha'ir Doher Kamoy Daharoy Sabirov, the galloping of the mighty soldiers who Kishamaka Asus Boritz Bukhech Raglov Mirakeda Meroiv Mirutsasakilu Mirakeda. This is their dancing as before. Parosh Male Perush Male Lavchad. If he lifts up the sword, Vav Vilahav Kivav Vayiso Avram Esenov. The Yonis and Tera game, the Chisaron Mila, they were missing a word in the Pasuk, Masek Lehoiv Vitzal Hoiv Siphon Vitzichtsuach Moi Ron Yon. Which means, I do not know what this means. Masek means it brings up the Lehoiv. The Lehoiv means the shine, I think. The Vitzal Hoiv Siphon, and the also another word of the Siphon means the sword. The tzalhoin means the shine of the sword, the tzichtzuach, which means the glow of the moi ronyon, the spear. Something very similar. The roiv chalol shayasu paparoshim, there are many dead bodies. The choyved pogger, kumoi roiv chalol, inyan kofel, the mila shonas, repetition, ki choyved hu inyan ribui kumoi amcho hakofen hazeh, vi adem loy, u fogger, kumoi chalol, kumoi lo yikore haguf pegger, ela kishumes. The word peger is another word for a dead body. The chain, the ain, ketzel, legvia, the choshel, begviasim, hoivim, yikoshel, begvias, achalolim, avol, lishon, givia, yovei, gam, kain, begufa, chai. So he says over here the word givia, even though in this context, it means a dead body, but the word givia can mean elsewhere, can mean even a living body. Okay, we'll leave it with that for today. We'll take a short break. We're going to learn now Hilchos Pesach. We're going to start to learn Hilchos Pesach in this next section.